Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Emmett Peppers today, and we're going to go ahead and go through the latest on Tesla news, on Elon Musk. And we're going to be first talking about Elon's appearance on Saturday Night Live to see if we've had any new lessons or new insights on Elon or Tesla. But anyways, Emmett, welcome back on the show.
Hey, Dave. Good to be chatting with you more regularly again. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. So what did you think of Elon's appearance on Saturday Night Live?
I think he did great. I mean, I think he took it very seriously, it sounds like, and he prepared very hardworking way. It was obvious, you know, and I think he did really good, you know, relative to his talent set. You know, like, he's not a natural actor, and he's very, like, you could tell he's very self-aware of his own awkwardness, and he really played that up, which was good, you know, it's like an AI being self-aware of itself or something. You know, Elon's like self-aware of his own like social awkwardness and some of these things, and he was able to run with it and play like the nerd or doctor or scientist characters. And then he did a really good job with that Wario skit at the very end. I thought that was pretty hilarious. Yeah. What about you? What were your thoughts?
I haven't watched the Saturday Night Live in ages. You know, I mean, I grew up on stuff. So I didn't have high expectations. I think I watched it several years ago. It was just like a letdown. But I was actually surprised. I thought Elon did a great job. I thought he was like, you could tell he really prepared for this thing, you know? It was probably like a whole week of, you know, memorizing, practicing, rehearsing, going through the whole thing. And I kind of wonder, like, for what, you know? I mean, like, like, he's so busy. But there's this other side of Elon where he just loves comedy. You know, he's tweeted articles from The Onion. I think he started his own thing. He funded something too. And then, you know, he's always like tweeting memes. So he really believes in the power of comedy. So I guess it's been a week of investment for him, you know, in comedy and just reaching people.
Yeah, sort of like a vacation. Like, I can't imagine Elon taking a vacation where he's sitting at the pool. You know, like, he's going to be doing – his vacation is like – doing something different, but in an intense way, maybe. You know? So this is sort of like a vacation from work and doing comedy sort of in an intense way, maybe. But it was probably really fun for him in a way. And I'm sure he still kept tabs at work and such. But it was good. I think it was probably a healthy exercise for him to go through. And, you know, I think it's something he can look back on. And maybe he'll go back to Saturday Night Live one day again in a year or two. Who knows? But I think it was good for the world to see, you know, this guy, especially – coming out as Asperger's there, that was a real interesting thing. I haven't seen a lot of news headlines. I haven't been looking at the news today yet, Sunday, you know, but I'm curious to see if there's like articles talking about it. You know, it's really brave of him to like just come out and let everyone know, you know, and, you know, it's no surprise to me, but it's a surprise that he would come out and let everyone know.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I thought that was like the big reveal, you know, him coming out. And I think it's a huge boon to the whole autism community that with, you know, people dealing with autism spectrum related disorders. But it brings awareness to the whole situation where it's like you could channel it in a way where it could be very productive, you know. And in Elon's case, he's done so in a way where he's basically become the wealthiest, one of the wealthiest.
And if you measure success by earned wealth from the bottom, he's the most successful person in the world in that measurement.
Yeah. And so, but I thought, I don't know. I'm curious in your situation, how familiar are you with Asperger's? Have you known, you know, people closely with it? And then how does that like impact or what are your thoughts? Does it help you understand Elon knowing, you know, that he has Asperger's?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I've known a couple people that, you know, it was known that they had Asperger's. One of my former boss, me and my colleagues suspect he's kind of on the spectrum. A super bright guy, one of the wealthiest people in the world, you know, he similar to Elon, he can still socialize to some degree without anyone, but the empathy is sort of lacking in some respect. Although I would argue Elon can empathize, like he can do it well enough to really engineer the incredible user interface of the Tesla that, you know, or to make sure it validate it, make sure it's top end, you know. So, but I know a lot of people with, you know, in general, the idea is Asperger's, they have a hard time relating to everyday people. And who knows, I could be part Asperger's. I don't know. It's like a category that, you know, we've invented for a certain type of personality. And it's one of those labels that just, it's like, it doesn't need to be black or white in some respects. You know, it's sort of just kind of like if people fit certain characteristics that are kind of labeled Asperger's, I guess. And that's just my feeling. It's hard to really think about it that way because, you know, as like a binary thing, because it's not really a binary thing in my view, I guess. I don't know. You mentioned in a video you did earlier, I listened to, that you grew up with some Asperger's people and you're very familiar, right? What do you think about it?
Yeah. So I was sharing, like, you know, most of my family had Asperger's growing up. Okay. And it's interesting because each person deals, or it's not a clear cut thing for everyone who has, like, it. Their personalities can be very different. And it comes out very differently as well. But I think generally speaking, like, what I've noticed is, like, there can be an extreme focus and persistence on something that's really, like, high level, and it lasts, like, a long time. And then,
like, an obsession.
And that could be, it can be productive in some ways, but it could also be unproductive, you know, like, let's say just video games constantly, all night, every day, whatever. And the other one other aspect is there is some kind of relational and social kind of challenge, meaning it is not natural for those with Asperger's to understand the full impact of their actions on others in more of a deep and nuanced way. You know, like, they can understand it kind of like if you lay it out kind of more obviously, but relationships are very complicated, you know?
Yes.
And one action might lead to several or 10 or 15 different, you know, sub-reactions and different stuff. And it's very complicated. And we learn that kind of typically naturally, but for those with Asperger's, they have a difficult time, like, understanding the complicated nuances, right, of social situations or relationships. So I've seen that, you know, in different ways. And for Elon, like, I've told my wife many times, like, hey, you know, Elon is definitely, you know, he's on the spectrum in a sense that he's got that focus, but he's also got this, you know, this side where he is relationally challenged in some ways, you know, but I mean,
you definitely could tell, sorry, but you could also, like, reading the books about him, the articles with his relationships with women, like, you could tell, like, that's a, you know, I'm not a master of relationships with women. That's one of my weakest links for sure. But it's certainly one of his weakest links. You could tell, you know, it's just, you know, his personal relationships are probably very difficult at times, like you were saying, I would imagine. But, you know, but anyway, go on. Sorry, what you're saying.
Yeah. But I mean, I think with Elon, one of the other things that I've noticed is, like, there can be kind of a very heightened sense of fairness and justice. And I think that's how Elon tends to relate with others. Like, he really wants to treat them fairly, you know, and with justice. And, you know, he might not be the most socially nuanced, you know, person in relationships, but he still will try to do what's the right thing to do, you know?
So he has, like, a sense of logic about it that he uses in a fair, what he deems is the fairest way or whatnot, maybe.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there are pros and cons. Like, the pro of hyperfocus is, like, whatever you're focused on, you could, like, really get focused. And then if you add on kind of this speed learning and then this, and what I think Elon has really gotten into the world of engineering and physics, where he totally, like, feels comfortable in that world because it's all defined. Like, relationships and social, it's like the rules are not defined that clearly, but engineering, science, like, all this stuff has clear rules, and he loves that stuff. He lives in that, right? And it totally, like, feeds off of his hyper-focus on it, you know? And he's one of the folks that have kind of hacked the whole system where he's used his hyper-focus to just unlock engineering, physics, companies, innovation. And it's like he's created this flywheel where, like, innovation just, like, is going so fast in all of his companies. But you know, it's when he admits and shares that he has Asperger's, it makes more sense, you know, that it's like, okay, this focus is like he's harnessed, you know, part of his personality and to help, you know, his goals or, you know, what he's doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm really proud of him that he brought it out like that and announced it. And I think it's a great thing for everyone else who, you know, has relatives or who it has Asperger's, you know, and it's like you said, a boon for that whole community. Like, hey, we can be successful too. Or, you know, my kids can be grow up to be successful too. You know, like this is great, you know. So I hope there's some publication news headlines that run with that positive story. Somehow I doubt that'll happen, but I wish there would be, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I was connecting the dots actually to Elon's Asperger's and his kind of uncompromising view on PR, right? He doesn't want to hire a PR team. I know, like, you know, you and Gary Black and many others in the community have kind of shared, hey, it makes sense to do a PR team. And I actually like agree with you guys in the sense that, yeah, obviously it makes sense. Like, why not have a PR team? You know, like, it doesn't necessarily, you know, destroy value per se. It's like, why, if you do it the right way, same thing with paid advertising, you know, I don't have, you know, I'm not like saying that every single paid advertising is terrible. I think you can do it in the right way.
You can educate people in the right way. Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to try to manipulate them or whatever.
Yeah. But I think there is something about Elon's personality where when he sees something that he doesn't agree with, like, you know,
it's like a principle thing, like a first
exactly
principle.
Yeah, he just is principally opposed.
Physics. This is like a social issue, so
exactly.
It's a
and he's willing to like take a stand, and he wants to do it the right way, his way, you know, that he thinks is right. And ultimately I think it does bring on some more risk, but then that's just Elon, you know, like you've got to give him freedom to do what he wants to do. I think
he takes risk all the time, and building this company.
Exactly. And then he'll compensate though for those risks, meaning, okay, he's not doing paid advertising, he's not doing a PR team, but he'll work doubly hard with engineering and with product, and he'll just like, you know, compensate with what really matters. Like, who cares if you don't have advertising and PR if you have the world's best product? Like, that's three times better.
Yeah, he'll give the answers to the press. Even if it's late, at least it's from the horse's mouth, like him, for example, versus like some PR person that no one knows at Tesla. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And then the other thing is, it kind of also explains a bit on why some people are so upset over Elon. Like, over the years, we've seen, you know, just lots of Tesla Q, Tesla shorts. But I've also seen a lot of people that are just personally offended, you know, by, I think, not just Elon, but a lot of times his promises, you know, they always bring up timelines, like he can't be trusted, et cetera. And like, I understand part of that because, like, you know, I think in the nuanced kind of complicated relational world, like your timeline does have part of it, like you're giving, I don't want to say your word, but like there is a relational complexity to that. And if you give these aggressive timelines, but you just don't hit them, but you don't hit them for like, it's way off, you know, like for example, recently the button, right? It's just like, you're way off. It's just like,
could be not, years away.
It's not even like, you know, a couple of days off or weeks, you know, just like, I think like it just reinforces like in some people's mind, they take it the wrong way, you know? And I think for Elon with his being on the spectrum, he's purely looking at it like just, it's his hope and his intention, but
hope that he thinks is realistic and, you know,
exactly. But for him, it's totally fine to change the timeline. Like there's no, you know, ramifications or implications or hurt feelings from other people. But, and so for him, it's fine, but it's complicated because other people, you know, can take it the wrong way. And I think that's just, you know, another kind of interesting kind of aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Dogecoin. So, here's where I think a lot of this stuff comes together. So yesterday before SNL, actually just during the day, I was telling my wife, like, she's like, oh, should we buy some Doge? Right. I'm like, oh man, I don't want to buy Doge. Right. And she's like, why not? Right. It's like, it's going up. Elon's like, you know, all for it. I'm like, man, it's like all this like pumping in crypto land. And it's just, I think part of it is like, I don't like the idea that it's like it feels like someone's gain is going to be someone's loss. It just I wouldn't say it's a complete pyramid scheme, but I think in some ways, it's just like the taste I get out of it, out of some of the pumping in crypto land, makes me hesitant. But I was telling my wife that I think with Dogecoin, she's like, I think Elon has something, you know, some plans for Dogecoin, right? And I'm like, I think there are two possible scenarios here. One is Elon really does have plans for Doge, and they're serious plans, and he's going to really put some weight behind it long term, like really maybe put a development team on it to even fork it or to really try to make it a big thing. The other kind of possibility or big scenario is that he really is joking, meaning he thinks it's possible Doge can become big, but he's not sure and he's speculating himself. He's just having kind of a fun time. He doesn't really have big plans for Doge himself. He's not really committed to it. You know, he's just he's just really funny. And, you know, it's just he wants to see what it could be like. But it's not like he's going to start a company. It's not like he's going to place like a big percent of his net worth in it, per se. Right. And for most people, they would say, no, Elon can't be just joking, because look at all of his tweets. Right. Look at all of his commitment. Right. He must have something planned. And I'm not going to discount that completely, because I think actually it's almost, I wouldn't say 50-50, but it's like in the same neighborhood, I think, the possibilities. But this other scenario where I think he could be just joking, it is plausible and possible, because part of it is with Asperger's, you're not completely in touch or in tune with all of the nuanced implications of all of your actions. Meaning like you could be pumping and you think, okay, it's people's responsibility to make up their own mind. And you don't feel the complete, you know, like many levels of implications of perhaps that the end people, let's say the end folks who put over, like it's always the last group of people, you know, who get in, who get hurt the most. And, it's very complicated, you know, because in a lot of ways people trust Elon, and there's a growing chorus of people who think that Elon is super committed to Dogecoin now, where it could be that Elon is just kind of having fun and he's not as committed as people think. And I think both of these scenarios we need to weigh. And I think they're both legitimate scenarios. I'm not going to discount one or the other, but, you know, it's like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, do you think both scenarios could be true at the same time?
I think there could be, like, for example, a mid scenario. For example, he's not totally joking. He's not totally serious, right? He's like, maybe, you know, it's obviously he's bought some Doge. He's bought some Bitcoin as well, right? So and he's stated that he'd be willing to buy out some of the larger wallet holders, right? So he's willing.
Yeah, he did state that. Yeah, can't be joking about that.
Yeah, he's willing to put in money, right? He's willing to put. But here's the other thing I was thinking about. Doge, up until a certain market cap, Elon can move it. He can really influence it. Meaning, up until I think 10 or 20 or $30 billion in market cap, if he puts in $500 million or $1 billion, it really, really moves the coin.
He might have already done that through some
proxy,
and he could be selling pieces at a time to keep it stable, you know, from going too crazy, too fast, or something. You know,
that's true. Yeah,
anything's possible. And the fact that he wants to put a Doge on the moon with SpaceX now—that's pretty crazy. I mean, I think it's sort of both combined. Like, he wants to make it the funniest thing, and he thinks that's ironically going to make it the most successful, which is possible. But yeah, Elon seems to make things come true, right? And sort of like when he saw Tesla already existed. Tesla Motors already existed when he first got on board there and turned it into what it is now. He like revamped it and rebuilt it, put his own money in. I feel like it's similar with Dogecoin. Like, it was already there, the infrastructure, and he just kind of like got into it. And whoever the big wallets were like, Elon, whatever you say, we'll do. We just want to hold a substantial amount still. And he's probably like, okay, get rid of 90% of your Dogecoin. I'll make it go up 20x very quick, and then we'll see what happens or something. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't, I bought a little bit. I opened up a Robinhood account and I bought a little bit on like Thursday or Friday last week, just like $800 worth, because they give you like $1,000 credit.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and I can check it on my Robinhood thing, but it's something I'm thinking about buying more of if it dips. You know, I mean, not a huge chunk of money, but I wouldn't mind getting. And it, I don't think it can go up 10x again. To be honest, it's going up what, like 100x in like 3 months. You know, it might go up 2x or 3x, but I can't imagine it going up 10x again. It maybe it does though, but you know, I think the crazy ride is over, and it's still going to go up if it's serious with Elon. But I think the biggest part jump might have happened, but it doesn't, you know, it just seems something's more to it with Elon, I feel like, than him just purely joking about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a legitimate case. But okay, so here's the other thing. I think after a certain market cap, maybe about $30 or $40 billion, Elon, it doesn't become Elon's game anymore. It transitions into, I think, kind of the world of the big, like, whale manipulators. Right. And these are the big crypto, you know,
huge. They try to buy it up.
Yeah. These guys are they are controlling billions of dollars worth of money. And they are experts in not just pumping, but dumping and manipulating media. Like, they control perhaps, you know, tens of thousands of bots and media sites, and just, you know, they're able to shift sentiment as well. Right. And, I think after a certain point, Elon pumps it to a certain point, but then it gets out of his reach.
But he must have some plan for that too, you'd think, right? Maybe that's something to do
with his work.
Maybe his wallet has enough where he can still stabilize the price to some degree. He must have some plan. He thinks far ahead.
I think it's a different game. I think the game is so complicated and so, like, it's a different league. It's not Elon's league anymore. We're talking about, this is the top of the top crypto manipulators, billions of dollars, just, you know, massive enterprises.
Yeah. But they can't really short it. They can buy it up, but it doesn't seem like something you could really easily short and drive the price down. There's probably ways to short it, but it probably is very expensive and it's probably not very worthwhile. You probably can't get too much to short, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I would imagine, like, they have, you know, a lot of ways where they could spark fear and, you know, plant stories and drive, you know, costs down,
but or then if price you have, down too. If you have Elon, you know, the most followed person in the world, you know, tweeting to counteract that with jokes, I don't know. That's like his whole plan.
That's the thing. I think up until 30 billion or so, like that, like it's Elon's world. But after that, it's you're entering the big leagues of crypto manipulation. And that's where I'm kind of like, I don't know. I think, it's going to be tested. I'm skeptical.
It's risky.
Yeah.
It's risky. I would not put, like, you know, double digit percentage of my net worth in Dogecoin. That's for sure. You know,
would you even
very put low it? Single digit at the most?
Yeah. 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 I wouldn't even put it
very low single digit. Yeah, it would be like 1% or less of my net worth for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'd have to be really able to put more than that. You know, I'm more confident in Bitcoin's, you know, ability to grow and stabilize than Dogecoin, but the return possibility with Dogecoin is obviously much higher too, right? So it's riskier, but it could go up, you know,
faster. That's true. I mean, Dogecoin is what, $70 billion in market cap at the time of, you know, this recording. My preference would be, why doesn't Elon just, if he's so interested in Doge and so interested in Bitcoin, my whole thing is why just not start your own crypto, you know?
I think they're working on that. I think, you know, there's something to it. Remember, you know, Zach on the earnings call said, you know, when they're ready to announce if there is something, they will. And I think they're probably working. And maybe it has to do with, like you said, Dogecoin, with a fork in the road with Dogecoin. You know, it might have something to do with it, I would imagine.
Yeah, to me, it's like, it would be far better just to start from scratch, just to say, do a master plan, you know, part one crypto, and say, here is why we're doing a new crypto. Here's, like, you know, our plan, and let people get in at ground level, right?
Well, can they do both? That's the thing. Can they have a ground level plan that's tied to Dogecoin somehow already? So like, it sort of gives them the head start to, you know, grow it from a base, you know?
Yeah. But to me, with Doge, it's already like, I don't know. It's ready. It just is so tainted in a way. It's just, it's just all run up, pumped up, and just, I don't know. I mean, to me, it just makes more sense to start from scratch, let people in at the earliest level, whoever believes in the vision, right? And then to really just make it a transparent thing, right? I don't know. This whole, to me, this whole Doge thing is, I don't know.
It's confusing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough one, man.
But he definitely, there's something up his sleeve on it. He's holding it close to his vest, and it'll be interesting to see what comes about of it in the next several months. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So a couple other things. So I'm wondering, what are you thinking about the markets in general nowadays? I mean, I'm looking at some of my kind of watch list. I keep about 50 or 60 companies, and some of them have been hit hard in the recent weeks, you know, ever since February. Yeah. And are there any companies that have been hit hard that you're kind of intrigued by, that you're maybe you haven't bought a position, or maybe you have, you're trying to maybe look into building a bigger position? Is there anything where you're thinking, I think there's some opportunity here?
Yeah, a ton of companies. I mean, a lot of the stuff ARK Investments buys, you know, a lot of the stuff the Motley Fool folks are interested in, you know, a lot of the growth tech stocks, we've talked about many of them. You know, one I follow, I haven't done anything with, but I do think Zoom, you know, has a bright long-term future. They've been hit hard. I haven't done anything with that, though. But I was just talking to a friend about that recently. And, you know, I think what I always thought the end of last year was like, yeah, just when the economy's back and everyone's going back to normal is when the market's going to get hit. You know, again, I thought that, I think I mentioned it several times, and it seems like we're at that point where all the lockdowns are going to be lifted very shortly, or already are in many states, and people are going back to work. Things are just kind of returning back to normal. The economy is getting healthy again. And that's when the market's kind of going to crash. Instead of crash, though, I sort of see it as like a soft landing right now. And it's like growth stocks taking the biggest hit, but then the value stocks are kind of doing decently and catching up and kind of going back to the, you know, old valuations we've had pre-COVID, where, you know, these value stocks were had a better multiple than what they had the past year, you know, and it's like the go back to work rotation, or whatever you call it, I guess, you know. And these growth stocks have just sort of, you know, we had a huge bump down from end of February through March, and then April it recovered a lot, or a decent amount, and now at the beginning of April, it's been tough. And that wouldn't surprise me if we continue going down for the growth tech stocks, the ones that we talk about and like a lot, for example, or that they kind of trade sideways for a while. You know, it's more of a soft landing. So their businesses keep improving, their growth rates of their earnings and all that. If they're growing substantially, like you saw Square, for example, which, you know, I have a position in, or they had incredible earnings a couple of days ago. But their stock, you know, went up $10 or so, and but instead of going down $30, you know, if they didn't have such incredible growth, maybe their stock would have been hit, you know, down 10 or 20%, like a lot of these other growth stocks after some earnings that looked decent, you know. So some of these super successful growth stocks will kind of have a soft landing, I think, instead of going up like doubling again or whatever. And a lot of these growth tech stocks that don't have like super impressive numbers, that are just like impressive, if it's just impressive, then they're going to be hit hard. Sort of like trading sideways. So that's why I think selling the options is a good play right now. And that's what I started implementing, a little bit more of that type of strategy. So just like we've seen with Tesla in the past, like the stocks and the businesses are disconnected, you know, near term. And people think, oh, the earnings are going to be out of this world for this company. It's growing 2x per year, 100% since last year, this quarter. And that, you know, they print that really earnings and the stock drops 10%. And it's like, what happened, you know? And that could happen for a few quarters in a row here until these valuations, you know, the multiples kind of come back to a pre-COVID multiple for the growth stocks. I don't know. I mean, that's sort of where I'm thinking things could be going, trading sideways for a while. I'm hoping that Q2 earnings reports, you know, it seems like these Q1 earnings reports weren't enough. But the Q2 earnings reports, if they're impressive enough for the growth stocks that we all kind of like, that maybe that'll be the base, and hopefully there's no more big drops, but it could go on another few quarters. I mean, that's my thought. We had such a huge change the last 12 months, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the macro market and these growth tech stocks?
Yeah, it seems like February, it felt like it hit a parabolic peak in a sense, you know, a lot of the fastest tech growth stocks. And it seems like even though like these growth stocks report great earnings, like nothing's moving them because it feels like, all of the momentum was behind them for a few quarters after COVID. And so it does seem like in a sense where, like, and Tesla fits into this picture as well, where A, you had great earnings, you have great growth ahead, but it's kind of just stuck, right, the stock price. And it's, again, this, you disconnect the stock price from the business. The business, you know, that's the other thing. Last year in 2020, the business didn't grow 10x, you know, like.
No.
Yeah. Like, and people don't complain about that, you know, like if when the stock is going
except
up.
Shorts too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like if the stock goes up too fast, then you're like, great, right? But then when the business is doing fantastic, but the stock isn't going up, you're like, what's going on? Right. You know?
Yeah.
But that's the reality of, you know, there are different times, you know, for different things. And yeah, after a period of a lot of momentum and stock price appreciation, the biggest odds are you're going to have, you know, some consolidation, if not some corrections, et cetera. But yeah, I think I'm curious to hear. So I have about 10 or so stocks that I'm starting to look into myself to, either build or start a position. Probably over half of them I already have a position. Actually, yeah, more than half. But I'm curious if there are any names in this list that you're kind of interested in as well. So first is Teladoc. Second is Palantir. Third, Coinbase. Fourth, CrowdStrike. Okay. Number fifth, Roblox. Number six, Twitter. Number seven, Peloton. Number eight, Zoom. Number nine, Shopify, Square, and Roku. Any kind of names like stick out that you're kind of interested in?
Yeah. Well, Square, I've had a position in for a while, and it's gone up a lot and contemplating closing some of it for some gains. But Roblox, we've talked about. They have their earnings Monday. It's going to be very, I'm excited. I think they're going to have impressive metrics to report. But like we were talking about, it might not be enough. The stock could just take a 10%, 15% drop, you know, just on even great number metrics of like bookings per user or whatever, you know. So there's certain metrics to look at. And I think long term, it's a great play. I just don't know how the stock. Twitter, I've had for a little while. And I still think there's a long, bright future for it. It's not, I don't think it's been given the, you know, the credit for the ability, for the value it gives to people. Like people, we get a lot of information from Twitter, you and me and a lot of the people who watch your channel, for example. It's important information resource and there's nothing else like it, you know, like it'd be hard to transition us all to some other information thing. So there's ways they can certainly monetize on it that they can, you know, I think there's some private equity firm that took a big stake, you know, recently and is trying to put more pressure on Jack and the stakeholders there to like turn on the monetization more. Like, for example, I'd pay a subscription to Twitter just to get rid of the advertisements, you know, like I'd pay to say, get rid of the advertisements. I don't want to see that in my feed anymore. It's just noise, you know, it just confuses me sometimes. And so I'd pay $10 a month for that, no problem. And I'm sure a lot of people would pay, you know, so there's lots of things they could do to, I think, monetize more. Hopefully they start doing more of that. And I think they will over time, just who knows when. And then I think you mentioned Palantir. I'm interested in that. I have a small position in that. I think I really like the management team, you know, and I think their information, you know, everything I've heard, I don't know them well enough. I haven't, you know, I wish I knew them better. But it just seems like they have some kind of corner on these like big government contracts for data to provide. And, you know, I can't regurgitate everything I've heard about them. I've listened to several analysis podcasts on them before taking a position and such, but their stock's been hit hard, you know? And so we'll see what happens. And then Zoom, we were talking about, I'm interested in them. I think just long-term, they have a bright, you know, I think the Zoom meetings are here to stay. You know, they're going to add new capabilities to them. I was even thinking, what's stopping Zoom from providing kind of like a YouTube competitor in a way, right? Like, could they host their own videos that they're recorded and that people want to make public easily and become like a more efficient YouTube, you know, like people already engaged in Zoom. It would be so easy to use both YouTube and Zoom for things, you know, like me and you, like I use YouTube to watch your channel and others, but I also use Zoom for a lot of reasons. So if it's already there, like things to watch, I would start using Zoom to watch things too. And if they could provide a better experience, I might start using Zoom more often than YouTube. You know, so it's just, I feel like they have a lot of potential if they execute well, which they've done. Whereas YouTube's part of a big conglomerate business of Google, and the bigger the business, the more bureaucratic it gets, and it's slower they can change and all that, you know. So that's why I like Zoom. They're kind of a pure play on that. And then what were the other, there was another one you mentioned early in the beginning before Palantir.
Teladoc. What were the first few? Teladoc.
I don't really know Teladoc's case. I know you've studied them. And there, what were the other two after that?
Coinbase, CrowdStrike.
And there's one more. What was the fourth one?
Peloton.
Oh, Peloton. Yeah. I have a small position in Peloton. I've had it for a long time. This recent hit, I think, took the stock down a lot. Luckily, I've been selling some aggressive covered calls, and I closed that covered call on this recent hit, and I'm going to open up a new covered call, I think, when it rebounds. It's already sort of rebounded a little bit, but I think it'll rebound more. They just have that brand, that iconic brand that people love, that, you know, are going to keep buying and subscribing to their stuff. And they'll get the treadmills back on, back going again, but that's not their, you know, bread and butter product, obviously. So, but I am interested, you know, Teladoc, I know a lot of people are high in them. They've grown a lot. I haven't studied them, to be honest. Like the whole medical space, I kind of like put to the side. I'm like, you know, I don't understand genomics. I'm not a doctor. You know, I understand my own health, right? I understand how to take care of myself, but I don't really know how to translate that to like which businesses are going to make a ton of money on this new like technologies of health stuff, you know? So I haven't taken the time to really focus on that. That category. But I mean, what you put it, I didn't watch the video, but I know you put something out recently in Teladoc. You're feeling kind of strong about that.
Well, I'm just kind of, so here's some background for some of this stuff is, after kind of doing a few, ARK Invest interviews of, I guess, Brett Winton, Will Summerlin, Yassine before, I've been kind of really super impressed by their analysts. And I've also been impressed by, kind of what I think is kind of their core business or investment model, which is they're trying to double every 5 years. Like that's the minimum like rate of return they want on every single stock they put in their ETF. Now, the thing is there are going to be certain companies that they think are going to like 3X, 4X, 5X or more within those same 5 years. And those are the companies they're putting outsized positions on. Right. So, for example, with Tesla, we know their price target is $3,000 or something, right? In 5 years or so. So, you know, that's like, you know, almost a 4 or 5X. And so that's why they have like a 10% right stake in Tesla. So when I look at that, I'm like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. Everything that they have that's above even a 2 or 3% allocation, they're thinking it's actually higher than likelihood that it's going to more than 2X, maybe 3X or more. And so I'm looking at, you know, their top positions, and Teladoc is pretty much their one of their largest positions. Just kind of looking at the possibilities of that. But then I've also been thinking along those lines of like, okay, what if you, if because I've always had this thing of, okay, let's look at companies that have a clear path to a 10X valuation in 5 or 10 years. But then if you change it around a little bit, you say, okay, let's kind of tweak it a little bit for ARK with ARK's kind of, you know, model and say, okay, let's just try it for a 3 to 4X in 5 years, right? Yeah. Because if you can get a 3X or maybe 4X in 5 years, then to get a 10X, you just need to do another, like, you know, let's say 3X, you'll get a 10X. So if the company actually delivers within the first 5 years and does a 3 or 4X, then your 10X is looking pretty good at that point, right? So, so how do we get kind of this 3X to 4X in 5 years one of the things is, well, let's look at some of these businesses that, you know, it's not just ARK Invest, but other businesses that have like maybe a clear path to do better than other companies, right? So anyways, that's kind of the background of what I'm looking at. It's another reason why I'm like, I started to look back into Peloton, because I'm like, you know, I looked into it last year. I did a video on it. I thought it was a great business, but I just, you know, wasn't into Peloton. But I think over the past year, they've really become the standout, one of the standout COVID winners. Like their brand has just, I mean, like, of course, you have to remove this whole recent tread incidents and all this stuff, which has tarnished their brand, which I think they're going to recover. But
it gave like a 30% discount to their stock price.
Exactly. Yeah. Sale. Yeah. And I love the I love the companies where it's super easy to understand their business. Like they're selling hardware, they're selling subscriptions, and I can model like the number of subscriptions and how much they're making and get a multiple like 5 years down the road, like stuff like that. But I'm still not convinced. Like Peloton is like, it's a great company, I think, but it doesn't feel like it's a Tesla. Like, there's something about like when you have a company like a Tesla or a SpaceX or something that has a mission that's so like grand, you know, it's not just trying to get market share of some existing industry or whatever. It's like trying to do something bold and new. There's something special about that, you know, it just puts it at a different level. So I do have some, you know, reservations and like in reducing, let's say, my Tesla position to really go into, you know, some of these names, but it's kind of,
makes sense. I mean, it's really hard to reduce the Tesla position for stuff because you're taking the tax consequence, and then you get to realize, okay, I'm paying, you know, 50% penalty reducing my Tesla to open this new position, you know? So it's versus if you just had cash to invest, it would be much easier to open these positions, right? It would just be a different story.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I definitely think there's a, I'm starting to get some interest in some decent buying opportunities, I think, you know, for certain companies. Who knows if the companies will go down further or, you know, stay around, consolidate for a while. I guess that's the risk at hand. Do you ever think about an idea of like starting a position in stock and then if it goes down further, converting that stock position to leaps to leverage up?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've thought about that with Tesla, and I tried it, you know, to some degree in 2015 or 16, you know, and it didn't work because the stock lacklustered still to 2019, you know, and those leaps, you know. So I think we went over my IRA account that time. I did something like that helped the IRA go down to like $30,000 again. But so I'm kind of like damaged from that experience, but I do think it's not a bad idea. But you have to kind of catch the macro market right too. Like you can't have like a 2008 crisis pop up, you know, in the midst of those 2 or 3 years or 2 years waiting for the leap to expire, you know? So that's the risk, right? Like if the market's not going to crash and you get it right with the stock or the company being the winner that you think it is, then you're good. But if one of those things is not right, you lose. So it's risky, but it can pay off big, like you're saying, I think.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about doing that?
I don't know. It's just an idea I was having, because it's like hard to know the timing, because it's like our stocks going to, especially growth stocks, you know, we don't know how long the weakness is going to last. Right. And that's,
You know what I've been thinking about with Tesla, you know, just on the point of Tesla, because we're so obsessed with it and people follow, and I think about it more than half the time versus all the other stuff, is I do think Tesla will be the largest company in the world by the end of the decade for sure. Like I think that's like 90% probable in my mind, you know, and that means 5 trillion market cap plus, you know, by the end of the decade, you know. And so from here to there, I just don't know when it'll happen, when that pop will happen, with all these delayed timelines. Like it might just be lackluster, be stuck in this range until 2025 and then 10x again suddenly, you know, like, you know, it's hard to say, right? And those leaps, you can't, 2 years out, that's as far as they go, really. It's like, that's kind of risky. So if you just, I was thinking about like, you can calculate it in your head and, or you could put it on a spreadsheet or, you know, some of these options tools and say, okay, if I had a, you know, $100,000 or $10,000 or, you know, whatever the number you want to work with, you could put like 20% of your money into Tesla Leaps every 2 years. And if you keep doing that every 2 years, at some point that's going to like go up 50x probably or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, so you have to make sure you have enough dry powder to keep re-upping it every 2 years until that explosion in the stock happens again, like it did in 2000, you know, this past 12 to 18 months. But exactly. That you gotta be really patient to do that. And it's tough to be so patient, sit on all that cash, just waiting, you know?
Yeah. And also yeah. It's tough after, let's say, you lose your first 20%, you lose your second 20%, yeah. you're going yeah. down.
It might not be to the third or fourth. Exactly. But by the fourth or fifth time, you'll be at 2030. And in my, well, I don't know. It just seems so definite to me that it's going to be the largest company in the world by then, you know? So maybe it'll be 10 trillion market. You know, your potential return could be huge, but it's a conservative way. Then instead of putting like almost all your money in Leaps right now, which I know some people do, which is to me kind of crazy. I mean, although I was sort of doing that right myself, I realized how kind of crazy it was. And I had a nice income to keep re-upping that every 2 years to some level, at least for several years until it kind of hit eventually. And, but if you don't have that, you could just lose your whole pile of eggs in the next 2 years if Tesla doesn't, you know, explode again.
Definitely lots of stuff to think about.
Sometimes
I think stock is, I mean, in some ways, like, you don't get that massive appreciation of leverage with, let's say, options. But on the flip side, you get this downside protection, meaning as long as you're willing to just hold on to it. It's like, it to me, there's this benefit of just relaxing. You know, every time, like, you leverage, whether it's margin or options, whatever, there's this added level of stress, anxiety, because everything
pressure
is,
the short-term movement. Yeah,
exactly. It's like heightened. But with stock, it just seems like it's just so relaxed in a sense, you know? Definitely interesting stuff. All right, Emmett, I want to wrap up this part here. What we're going to do is we're going to do a part two. Emmett came up with this idea earlier to do an interview of me on some just questions he had. We'll put that out as a part two, and we'll probably put it out after a couple of days, but stay tuned for that. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and subscribe, and we'll put Emmett's, he's got a YouTube channel actually called Good Soil Management with his fund.
Good Soil.
Okay. And then his Twitter account will be in the video description, and we'll also have his playlist, which lists all the videos that we've had on this channel. All right. Take care, and we'll see you guys in our next video. Thanks.